Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, irishradio.com, worldwide. And my guest, indeed, friends, first of the day, is Helena Nolan. And she is the Consul General of Ireland in New York. And Consul Helena, you're very welcome indeed.
Thank you so much, Adrian. It's delightful to be back on the program with you.
You know, yes, and we're delighted, obviously, to have you. And indeed, you can launch, while we're at it, the Irish Heritage Month, which, in fact, is, a few days old, because on Wednesday, none other than the President of the United States, President Joe Biden, declared this month, the Irish Heritage Month. What a great honor it is for Ireland. A month of March that each year, is designated to Ireland. How is that indeed going to be celebrated? And what is what's the news with respect to the St. Patrick's Day season? Not just St. Patrick's Day itself, because obviously, we're very very happy to announce that the Taoiseach, former Taoiseach, will be coming to New York.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're so right. It is, of course, a huge honour and privilege that we have this very special month of March recognised by proclamation as a month to honour and celebrate Irish-American heritage and the contribution of Ireland in America and that very, very strong, positive and enduring relationship between our two countries. And I think President Biden also paid tribute to the grit and determination of the Irish in America. So it is a wonderful month for us. It's a busy month, as you said, but a real privilege to have it. We will, in fact, have three ministers coming during the month, starting with Minister Roderick O'Gorman tomorrow, Sunday, who will march in the St. Pat's for All parade. And then we will have Minister Norma Foley coming the weekend before St. Patrick's to Philadelphia for a beautiful program there where there's also a wonderful parade. And she will come on to New York on Monday the 13th. And then, as you say, Taoiseach Micheál Martin will arrive in that evening and he'll be with us for the whole week, all the way through to walking up the avenue on the 17th of March. And it'll be marvellous to welcome back the Taoiseach. He was previously here, as you've said, in his capacity as Taoiseach. He became Taoiseach at the end of last year, so it'll be his first visit in with us in his role as Taoiseach and Minister for Foreign Affairs and Minister for Defence. So he has an immensely busy schedule, as you can imagine, at home, but he is giving us a whole 5 days of his time here in New York, so we're very honoured to take care of that programme for him, and we want to make sure that he gets to meet as many people as possible while he's here. I know that's his priority also.
Now, I want to ask you, because it is not only international news, but world news, that this very week, the Windsor, what is now referred to as the Windsor Agreement, is something that actually we have been waiting for, for year after year, many, flag smoke, from the chimney saying almost there, almost there, almost there. So, but it looks like we are, in an ideal position now. Can you just give us a brief rundown or overview of, the Windsor Agreement, which was signed off on this week?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, you're right. We're at a very positive moment. The Windsor framework has been agreed very much welcome the fact that the UK and the EU reached agreement on that new way forward on the Northern Ireland Protocol. I know that many of your listeners will be deeply familiar with the issues around that. And so this framework is a set of joint solutions that will comprehensively address the concerns raised by people and businesses in Northern Ireland. So the outcome and the framework itself is really all about Northern Ireland and those concerns that have been raised. It provides the stability and the predictability that the people in Northern Ireland want. It protects Northern Ireland's place in the UK internal market. It ensures that the same food and medicines will be available for people in Northern Ireland as in the UK. And it gives Northern Ireland's representatives and stakeholders their say in how arrangements will apply in Northern Ireland. So it's really clear from this framework that the EU has listened very, very carefully and closely to the concerns in Northern Ireland from elected representatives, business, civil society, consumers, you know, right across Northern Ireland. And there's clearly been some constructive working together between the EU and the UK, which we all welcome. And they've agreed these practical and very comprehensive solutions. So this is something that deals with real-life concerns, and it will enable the institutions of the Good Friday Agreement to get back up and running, which I know everybody wants. And, you know, we really have to think now, I think, as Tónaiste said, about the people of Northern Ireland, what they want, what they need. So this is an opportunity to find consensus, move forward, as you say, open a new, very positive chapter. And it's really very, very timely, of course, as well, given that this year is the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. And that's a very, very special anniversary that we all want to commemorate and mark. And in particular, here in this region, to mark and commemorate the absolutely essential and crucial involvement of the US administration and of Irish America in how that agreement came about and in how it's going to move forward into the future. So, yeah, a really timely, pivotal moment here with St. Patrick's Day, the Windsor Framework, the Good Friday Agreement, everything in place for a positive way forward for the people of Northern Ireland.
Now, I want to let our listeners know a little bit about your own background. Born in Kilkenny, and you had obviously, in joining the Department of Foreign Affairs back in 1990, what drew you to that particular, you know, area, that career in foreign affairs?
Right. Okay. Yeah, you're right. I'm from Kilkenny originally, a small village called Dennettsbridge, and then Thomastown. Went to boarding school in Kilkenny City with the Loretta nuns there. And my mother tells me that I sent away for a leaflet the old Department of Labour in Ireland. Some of your listeners may remember the time, long pre-internet, when the Department of Labour used to issue leaflets about different careers. And your career guidance teacher would sit you down and say, you need to write away now for some of these leaflets. So apparently one of the leaflets I sent off for was Third Secretary, Junior Diplomat in the Department of Foreign Affairs. So I would have been, I don't know, 15, 16 at that time. I read a lot, Adrian, as you know, and I think everybody knows I love books. So I think it was that sense of being able to go out into the world. You know, it was that aspect that would have appealed to me as a teenager. And subsequently, I began my career in the civil service, actually working in the Department of Education. And while I was there, one of my colleagues was actually doing some work with development cooperation in foreign affairs, you know, the Irish Aid Programme.
Yep.
And he was giving some advice from an education perspective. And so it recalled to me that I'd had this earlier notion of this career. So an opportunity came up to apply for the position in foreign affairs in 1990, and off I went and did the exam and the interview and whatever. And I was lucky enough to be one of four people who were called at that time. This was the 80s into the early 90s. There weren't a lot of good jobs going around at the time. So I was very fortunate to be one of four people selected. And off I went in February 1990 to Ivy House on Stephen's Green.
Yeah.
And that was the start of it.
Well, yeah, and it has been an exciting run so far, indeed, because, you know, you have served, oh, in so many roles through, you know, through the last almost 30 years, including, you know, serving as ambassador to Belgium. Can you tell us a little about that? That's no small undertaking, and indeed very prestigious title as well, and job.
Thank you. Yes, it was. I mean, the first thing I suppose to say is anywhere you go to serve as head of mission or as ambassador, it's a single honor because you're going as ambassador of your country, you're representing your country, and there's a great sense of pride in that and in wanting to do justice to that. On all of our postings, whatever grade or level we go at, we obviously represent Ireland, but it's a special honour when you're chosen to go as ambassador and head of mission. So that was my first ambassadorial assignment, so, you know, I'll always think of that one very fondly. I had 4 years in Belgium, the immediate 4 years before coming here to New York. Of course, Consul General in New York is also a very, very important and significant role and highly sought after in our service. So a huge honour and privilege to be given this job also. But Belgium, I was delighted to find, had a great love for Ireland. Huge amount of travel by Belgians to Ireland. They love the Wild Atlantic Way. They love Irish food. And so it was a very warm environment to go into. There was an open door always for me there. And coming from Kilkenny, as you mentioned earlier, delighted to find that the a lot of the streets of Belgium were paved with Kilkenny limestone. And of course, a very old connection between Kilkenny and Dame Alice Kittler, the famous Denzian of Kilkenny, whose father was a Flemish merchant. So I found a lot of connections actually between Flanders and Kilkenny and between Ireland and Belgium, which, you know, when you go to a country to represent your own country, it's always really interesting to find those hidden connections. I think here in this role, those connections are very visible and they're very well known. They're historic and enduring. Belgium, it took a bit more discovery, so it was always a lovely surprise to find a new link between our two countries. And really, I suppose that's what the whole diplomatic role is about. It's about that sort of interplay of those connections and how we communicate with one another and across different cultures and how we learn about each other's cultures. And we would have done a lot of what we would call cultural diplomacy work in Belgium, where we engaged in that whole sphere and found a huge interest again in Irish writers, in Irish theatre, in Irish music, Irish food, but also those historic links that went all the way back to the 1300s, 1400s. So it was a fascinating post and very different from here, but I suppose the similarities are those people-to-people links, and that's what we're all about. Like yourself in your job, it's all about people and it's all about communication.
And a very exciting, you know, career at the same time. I just want to ask you, though, about the earlier years. We indeed know, and a lot of people in, particularly in the New York area, know that your husband, Sammy, is indeed somebody who we all really, you know, happy to meet and to greet. But you have two sons, and having chosen a career in, you know, in foreign affairs, how do you balance, you know, having children, uprooting children, taking them from, you know, post to fill, though in fact it's not as bad as it sounds. But what is their reaction as kids, you know, growing up, in an environment where mommy is, you know, an ambassador, she's a consul, she has a consul general, and she has that career. Is that an issue, you know, generally for those who are, you know, who choose to serve in foreign affairs?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, Adrian. I suppose an awful lot of careers now involve international travel or international assignments in a way that maybe when I first started in foreign affairs, maybe they didn't. You know, as I said, it was the attraction of travel that first drew me to it. But I think an awful lot of careers now involve some time either traveling on business or living away from home. It brings, you know, it brings some complexities and challenges, obviously, but it also brings huge opportunity. In terms of my two boys, I think, you know, I'm lucky. They've always been very supportive of my career. I think it's a good example for them to see that their mom as well as their dad can have a good professional career and can be involved in international travel and can represent their country. I think they're proud of what I do. I think they're proud to be a part of it. Definitely there are challenges, but I guess there are challenges in all areas of life, in all aspects of work. And we all have to learn to deal with those. My son Stephen was actually born overseas. He was born in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia. So that was an interesting experience. Look, I think with kids, you know, what it comes down to really is if mom and dad are happy, or if the family unit, whatever the family unit is, if the family unit is happy, they feel safe and secure wherever they are. And what we would have done as they were older would have been to talk things through. So if I was going for a particular promotion or assignment or a new role or a lot of travel, we would discuss it as a family unit. And I remember on one occasion them saying to me, you know, it's okay, Mom, you know, it's your turn now, which I thought was a very nice thing for them to say. So maybe I'm just very fortunate. But I do think everyone has to grapple with this in some shape or form.
Yeah.
And as you say, it's about trying to find the balance. And for me, it's about also looking on every challenge as an opportunity and finding the best in it. And certainly there's been huge rewards in this career, and the kids have enjoyed those too. They enjoyed coming to Belgium.
Absolutely.
They enjoy visiting here in New York. So,
well, you know, in my day, immigrating, at least, you know, immigrating, you did not know what was that it, were you ever going to get back, and so forth. But so, in comparison to, you know, assignments in foreign affairs, at least you know that you're going to, you know, eventually, you know, return, and you're never that far away from Ireland anyway. And indeed, it used to be, and sometimes I'll say half in fun and half in earnest, that I was the only member of my family to emigrate to New York. The rest of them emigrated from Mayo up and around Dublin and whatever, and, you know, so that's because they were afraid to fly, in my book anyway. But, yes, moving around, but do your kids say, my mom, the poet, because you are, and you're an award-winning poet, and obviously, you know, you have a collection, the Bone House, and it's inspired, of course, and on research in the travels of Elizabeth Bishop in Ireland. Then you've also published poetry and fiction in various anthologies and magazines. What was the... Can you remember when you decided that this was an aspect of your life? It was something that was within you, and did you consider that to be, you know, a hobby? Was it a yearning to become a poet and and a writer. And when did you get chance to indeed fit that into your schedule?
Yes, Adrian, we better address that one now. We don't want everybody to think I'm sitting here in my office on Park Avenue writing poetry. Well, now the secret is out, right? You've announced it to your listeners. So yes, I suppose there's a secret poet inside every Irish person, I think.
Yeah.
Patrick Kavanagh, I think, said Ireland has a standing army of poets. So in little snatches of time, I managed to do a little bit of it now. Definitely not as much as previously. At one point, I took a little bit of time out and did a master's in creative writing for a year. So I was writing a lot then. I think since then, I spend most of my time writing speeches and other official tradecraft, but I do try to find a little snatch of time here and there when I can write a poem or try and find some poetic inspiration. It came about, I think, just when I was very young, just very organically. I was always reading from a very young age and kind of scribbling and writing things myself. In my primary school, we were asked every week to write a poem in English and a poem in Irish and read it out to the class, and the class would vote, and whoever was voted as the preferred poem then got to write it into a very special copybook that the teacher kept on a shelf. So
yeah,
there was that competitive element early on as well. I think my very first though inspiration or sense that, you know, a woman could be a poet was hearing Yvonne Boland on the radio when I was quite young, and suddenly realizing that this was a woman, an Irish woman. She was alive, unlike all the poets in the poetry books we had who were long deceased. And I was just very inspired, I think, by her voice and her example. So I was always scribbling away. You know, I always had either a book or a little copybook with me. That was my thing.
Yeah.
As I say, I did the master's about 15 years ago. And more recently then, I was asked by our Secretary General to undertake what turned out to be a very rewarding task. It was coming up on 100 years of the Irish Diplomatic Service, and various books and histories were being created. And he wanted to have also a history of all of the personal writing and creative writing done by people who worked in the Department of Foreign Affairs over the last 100 years, because there were a lot of us. I'm not the only one. So I think we found between 60 and 70 contributors who had been writing poetry, prose, history, memoir, essay, in a personal capacity, an unofficial capacity. And with two colleagues, I co-edited that book. We created an anthology called All Strangers Here, and that was published a couple of years ago, and it's just gone into a second edition. So that's a really nice insight kind of into the behind-the-scenes world of what it's like to work in the Irish Foreign Service. And we included some family members who had been on posting with Irish diplomats also, to give that perspective.
Yeah.
And there's even some writing by children in there. So that's what might be a nice one for your listeners to look at now that it's back in its second print run, All Strangers Here, published by Ireland House, a lovely press in Ireland. So that was very rewarding. I was working on that on and off through some of the COVID times, you know, when obviously we were very restricted. A lot of events weren't happening anymore. So since I wasn't going to functions and things in the evenings and at weekends, I had a bit of time to focus on that. And again, you know, I always find a little bit of poetry added makes everything that little bit better.
Definitely.
I always try to quote Irish poets in my speeches at the UN as well during my...
Yes.
My time at the UN as disarmament director, I would throw in a little bit of Yvonne Boland or Seamus Heaney whenever I got the chance.
And of course, you were no stranger to New York when in August of 2021, August 26th to be exact, you took up the assignment of the Consul General of Ireland here in New York. You knew New York quite well, you know, with your assignments to, you know, to the UN. And can you briefly tell us about that role your role in terms of, you know, a connection with the UN. What was that about?
Sure. Well, I was based at headquarters, and I was Ireland's disarmament director, but coming over to the UN quite frequently to negotiate a new treaty and to attend various conferences on international instruments relating to disarmament. So, but what I would say is that I knew a postage stamp square around that part of New York, the UN, the permanent mission, the hotel. I really did not know the city, and I certainly did not know the extent or the role of Irish America here in the city. So that has been hugely rewarding to discover and engage with since coming back in my current role. You know, that when you work on these conferences and these negotiations at the UN, you go in very early into the United Nations building, you go down several escalators into a warren of rooms, and you don't really surface again until very late at night. And you're sort of in that UN, you're in that UN bubble, and you're there with, you know, there are 193 countries in there in the UN, and you're working multilaterally. Whereas this role now that I'm in, it's that bilateral role. It's all about the relationship between Ireland and the United States. It's about Ireland, New York. It's about the rest of our consular region here. So I can't claim to really to have known New York that well before I came here, other than a few bookshops and a few theatres and museums and galleries that I would try to get to sometimes on a Saturday to cure my head in between UN negotiations. And of course, it's a privilege now to be able to celebrate so much Irish culture and Irish cultural heritage here in my role as CG. We're absolutely blessed with the amount of Irish talent and brilliance that's on display here all the time. I know you enjoy the Origins First Irish Theatre Festival.
Oh, absolutely,
I often see
you
at the Irish Arts Centre. I often see you at the Irish Rep at the New York Irish Centre. We just have an incredible community here in terms of culture and in terms of all the community activities that go on. And the support that's here for our community is so impressive. It never ceases to amaze me, actually, the spirit of giving back that continues to persist here, and how people hold each other up and celebrate one another. And, you know, there's no pulling up the ladder after you. Everyone who's successful tries to bring others along with them. That's so impressive, and very proud to see that here among our community.
And that is indeed, that didn't start yesterday, because I think you know, when we look at those who came, you know, from Ireland before us, and it was always and ever, we'd like to say peculiar to the Irish, but maybe we were just better at it, in taking care of those who want to come here. And, you know, with a lot of cohesive effort and the helping hand, that's something that we're all very familiar with and very proud of. I want to ask you, though, friends, my guest is Helena Nolan, Consul General of Ireland in New York. You know, when we think of the consulate, when we think of, you know, the role of ambassador, well, consulate in particular, we think that's where you go to get your passports. And I'd like you, first of all, you don't have to go anywhere now to get your passport. You can do it all online. But if you could give us kind of an overview of, you know, the role of the consulate, and what else is there? And you might want to start with, and if you don't, I will, the tremendous level of support from the Irish government, the support group for immigrants, and what that actually means. Sometimes we take it for granted. Well, you know, yeah, Ireland and the Irish government should be interested in us, and, you know, should help with the funding. But it's a lot more than that.
It is, sure. Thank you. Yeah, no, absolutely. As you say, the passport service has modernized, and it's a very innovative service now, one of the best in the world, and available online. So that's fantastic for our customers to have that facility. But, you know, we, as you say, the consulate is much more than that. We still, of course, do provide a lot of consular services, and our community are hugely important to us. What we want people to feel, I think, is that, you know, this is Ireland's home in New York, and we have every month we have our First Friday networking breakfast, which is open to everybody. The next one, or the most recent one there, was on Friday, the 3rd of March, and there's one First Friday or sometimes First Thursday of every month. We love to welcome in everyone for that, including the younger generation that are coming over. And as I said, we're very involved in promotion of culture, but also promotion of trade. We have a huge number of Irish government ministers and other high-level visitors that come through the consulate, I think around 30 last year. And so we set up programs for them to go out and meet people here, be it community, economic, political contacts, whatever needs to be made, just keeping that relationship very close and connected. But you mentioned in particular the Immigrant Support Programme, something that was initially the brainchild, actually, of Tánaiste Ní Chathair Martin, who, as you say, will be here with us very shortly for St. Patrick's Day. And he saw a need there for the Irish government to provide that level of support for our diaspora and for our diaspora organisations. And to be honest, Adrian, you know, we couldn't fully do our job here, or we would need a much, much bigger consulate here if we didn't have such incredible organisations out working in the community. So we are thrilled to partner with them and delighted every year to see their applications coming in. We've just had the latest round of applications have come in to our Vice Consul Dermot Fitzpatrick, whom you know well, and all of the team here will be reviewing those, and then the decisions will be taken to provide once again a large amount of funding to our immigrant support program partners, and that will be right across, you know, youth mental health services, yes, seniors' lunches, it could be some cultural events, and everything will be aimed at supporting and reinforcing the support that's there for our community right across our consular region. It's something that's very special and very important for us. I think New York probably handles one of the largest funding rounds, and it's something that we like to mark every year if we can. By having a minister here, I think a couple of times we've had our minister for the diaspora here at the time when the announcements are made, and we're able to celebrate that together. I just really want to pay tribute to those, again, to those organisations who support our community and do such incredible work. You know, many of them have been doing it for very many years. A lot of them are supported by a huge number of volunteers. And a lot of donations that they also get from the community. So we're all in this together, basically, I think is the message, as you were saying earlier. And there is something quite special about that within the Irish community. I don't necessarily see it elsewhere. And I'm very proud of it, and we're very proud to be able to play our part in supporting it through that line of funding. But to come back to the role of the consulate, again, as I said, you know, we really want to be seen as the home for Ireland in New York. We have our rotating art exhibition on the walls here as well, where we like to celebrate artists and photographers based here in New York. We've just done a refresh of that, and people will have enjoyed seeing that on the 3rd of March. But anyone coming in from now on will get to see some of the new art that we have on display. And that's always a thrill as well, to have the artists in here with us.
And, you know, you have also Nick Quaife, who is the attaché, cultural attaché there. Mm-hmm. And just in the last, perhaps since you came here, this is somebody who actually has done and continues to do a great job in getting to areas that didn't even know they were, you know, in the running for not necessarily financial support, but also within your consular
New York, New Jersey, Delaware, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, and Ohio.
Ohio.
That's our full consular region. Yeah.
All right. Well,
you're right. Nick Quaife has been with us for about 2.5 years now, and we also have Schaefer Quinlan on the West Coast, based in LA. So between the two of them, they cover the whole of the United States. So that's also an indication, I think, of the value that the Irish government places on Irish culture and Irish cultural heritage, and how we want to support that right across the U.S. mission network. And so the expertise of the two culture attachés is really valuable, their network, their connections, their understandings, and also the fact now that they can curate more regional approaches. So if artists are coming here, that they don't just go to one location, that we maximize the potential and maybe have them go to a number of different locations.
And not just to the large cities. It is, I think, that's a tremendous, and it's a new experience from lots who didn't even think there would be that much interest. You know, I know your time is, and we want to thank you for being with us. But you know, I also would like you to tell us, you know, about the significance of the Cross-Border Orchestra of Ireland and coming to Carnegie Hall on St. Patrick's Night. Ciarán Grant and Orla Maguire putting on what has become such a great, great display with an organization that didn't wait for the Good Friday Agreement, the Cross-Border Orchestra. Go down in history as being one of the greatest organizations that started from just people living both sides of the border got together. The Irish government, again, very supportive of this tremendous event taking place on St. Patrick's Day at Carnegie Hall.
Absolutely, Adrian. Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. I think it's going to be a really iconic moment for us. So after the parade later that evening in Carnegie Hall with the Cross-Border Orchestra of Ireland, incredible group of young people, there will be joined on stage by another wonderful group of young people, a young people's choir from Fairfield.
Yeah,
and it's just going to be a very, very special moment. We're hoping, I think, that Mayor Adams will be on stage at the beginning. Yeah. Tánaiste Micheál Martin will be there on stage at the beginning. And, you know, just an amazing opportunity for people to go along and see these incredible young people and various other, I think, special guests. Performances. There are still a few tickets available because Carnegie Hall is quite big, but they are going to sell fast. And I think it's going to be a very special moment in time and in history to be there and with the Tánaiste and various other special guests. So if anyone hasn't grabbed a ticket yet, I'd encourage them to do so as soon as possible and to be with us. I think it's just going to be a beautiful occasion. And another reminder as well, you know, how important it has been that, as you say, we never gave up and the work continued in reaching agreements on the Windsor Framework, and that we can celebrate the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement, and that we can celebrate the fact that these young people have so much potential and so much opportunity ahead of them because of the fact that, you know, people have had the vision and the determination to move forward and have been able to make tough decisions and get the job done. Because really that's what this is all about, right? It's about creating that space and opportunity for that generation to have the chance to flourish. And, you know, you're quite right. You know, all credit is due to those behind the Cross-Border Orchestra who, again, persisted and continued through tough times to give those young people that unique opportunity for bonding and connecting through music and culture, and now to have the opportunity to come back again to New York. I know it's not their first time here, it's not their first time in Carnegie Hall, but it's their first time in quite a few years. And, you know, with COVID and everything else that has happened in between, it's going to be that iconic celebratory moment, and we're thrilled to be partnering with them and supporting them in that. I think it's a very special message on which to end that whole week of St. Patrick.
Yes.
I should say we've had a week of St. Bridget as well in February.
Yes.
So it's lovely that we have that opportunity to celebrate the achievements of women in Ireland, but also women in our diaspora. And we had an amazing group of women over from, again, Ireland, North and South, women
right.
CEOs and founders of their own businesses. And they were here sharing their experiences and seeking investment. So a very impressive bunch of women. And then we had an event with what we called our Women of Extraordinary Ability here in the consulate, celebrating
yeah.
women who were succeeding in formerly sort of gender stereotyped roles. And I think that was very inspiring for our audience as well. And it was a lovely, again, positive event to participate in and sort of honouring women of achievement here in New York with Irish American and American backgrounds and what they had in common. So, no, it feels like a very special and positive time at the moment between St. Bridget and then St. Patrick and as I say, the Good Friday anniversary. So lots of positivity ahead, and we won't just be honouring the GSA anniversary through March and April. This is something we'll be marking the whole way through the year here in the consulate. So I'll have lots more to share with you throughout the year. Some lovely events coming up that we'll be encouraging everybody to participate in with us. We love to see everybody here at the consulate, and I love getting a chance to get out to meet everybody.
And you do a great job on that. And just on that note, you have such a vibrant and marvellous staff at you know, at the Irish Consulate here in New York, and it's practically at every occasion you have. If you're not there, you know, you have indeed a representative from there. And so, again, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for joining us today and filling us in on a lot of stuff. Best way to get information on the Consulate of Ireland is to go to the website, which is indeed riddled with information, a lot of information, you know, including information on what to do in an emergency, and it gives much more information than we were able to cover this morning with Helena Nolan, Consul General of Ireland. We thank you for your time, and also we see a lot of you, and I'd say we'd see a lot more in this month of declared Irish Heritage Month. Thank you very much, Consul.
Thank you so much, Adrian, and thank you for mentioning the team. Of course, we have a wonderful team here, and they're all attending many, many events over the next weeks and months. So a fantastic team here at the consulate. I want to pay tribute to them. And thank you for mentioning the website, and of course, people can also follow our activities and connect with us across all of our social media platforms. I think we're on everything: Twitter, Facebook,
yep.
LinkedIn, Instagram. We also have our Green Light newsletter, which will be going out again very soon. People can sign up for that. So thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to chat to you and to speak to your listeners. It's always a pleasure to see you, and it's always a pleasure to chat to you. Look forward to catching up over the next few busy weeks of the season.
Absolutely. If we don't meet at least twice a week, one of us is doing something wrong.
We'll see you soon.
Okay, thank you. Good friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USAIrishRadio.com.